With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There'll be a retribution. They're gonna tell you all about the latest execution at the Mole Patrol. They're looking for clues. They're trying to get a call from Andy Cruz. The Mole Patrol.
That was Will from America, and yes. We are Mole Patrol with a theme song officially. So now you know the podcast is official. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler, joined here by Jess Lease and Brooklyn Zed, who are hearing Will from America's theme song for Mole Patrol for the first time, just like all of you. A bop that slap, Zed? Does that fit the bill?
Yeah, what a delight.
It was good, right?
I had a great time.
Jess, what were we saying before we got on here about Will from America? We're just surprised he's still bothering with any of us.
Yeah, I'm continually amazed that people this talented are still stooping to contribute things to our stupid podcast.
Well, I'm really glad that that is still the case. Thank you, Will from America, for the incredible theme song here for Mole Patrol as we enter week five, or episode five. I guess it's technically week six of Mole Patrol here, as we are still on the search to find out who is the mole. And by we, I mean me and the other people who have never watched The Mole for the first time, who are watching along with me and with Jess and Zed. But Jess and Zed have obviously seen the show a bunch. They know what's happening. I got no idea. It's a fun little bit of tension that we have here on the podcast as I make wild swings at pitches that are not meant for me. You cannot see this, dear listener, but we record as a video chat. And we entered the video chat this week, all of us, with team names. There's the smart team, the socialist team, and the stupid team. I wonder who is who. Any guesses out there in movie land? Obviously, I'm the smart team. It's pretty clear. Pretty clear.
Really challenging game we're throwing to the mole people right now.
we're gonna leave it up to the imagination. Is Jess smart team, socialist team, or stupid team? Is Ted socialist team, smart team, or stupid team? Am I stupid team, smart team, or socialist team? Is it possible that you can be a little bit of all three? I wonder.
I noticed none of us are resourceful.
Yeah.
Maybe all of us are resourceful.
I think so.
I don't know about that for myself. I'm on the stupid team, folks. Let's just spoil it. I'm the stupid team. It's me. I'm the one.
I want to point out that I came into the chat with stupid team, and Josh yelled at me, and I said, well, I was going to say smart team and you were stupid team, but I thought that was insulting. And Josh is like, come on, man, I'm the stupid team.
Yeah, let's just play this for keeps. Let's just call it as it is. Let's play it as it lies on the field. I'm definitely the one that gets ferreted to the fancy hotel where I'm getting pampered. And then I find out that if I don't sabotage one of you, I will lose my room. And so that is the main point of inspiration for why I'm going to sabotage you. It has nothing to do with doubling the pot. I just don't want to sleep in the smart car.
I guess I'm sleeping in the smart car.
You're sleeping in the smart car, Seth.
It's all right. I'm small. I fit.
Oh, my God. Another fun episode of The Mole. Of course, if you're just joining us, we go spoiler free here on The Mole. Do not at me, but please at Zed and Jess, at Hard Rock Hope, at Haymaker Hattie, at Reality TV Rehapups is where we are as well. Some news at the top. We are five episodes deep into season one of The Mole. I am to understand we have four episodes left. But we shall be pausing our journey next week to accommodate the fact that I am on the road myself, not in a smart car. I am in a rare moment of breaking away from work for a little while. So I'm going to relish that opportunity and skip the podcast next week. So we're going to hit pause. No podcast next week. We will be back 2 weeks from today with our episode 6 recap. How should people fill the void, Jess, of Mole Patrol while we're gone? Maybe it's a good opportunity if they haven't gotten on the Tough as Nails train.
I mean, that was going to be my suggestion, because Tough as Nails, I feel like, is the blueprint for every RHAP podcast going forward, which is to say that I feel like for every reality show we cover in the RHAP universe, the host needs to tune in, become so invested in it that they join the podcast.
Yeah. Do we think, Zed, now that we have a theme song with Andy Koops shouted out in it, has this progressed our journey towards getting Anderson Cooper on the podcast?
Well, if that doesn't do it, I don't know what will.
Well, we have 2 weeks to see if it's going to make any kind of difference. We've got no news to report by week 6. I don't know. We're going to have to execute some of the nuclear options. We don't want to talk about those yet. We have some plans. We don't have any plans.
Eliminating the filibuster?
Yeah. That could work. Did that work? Does that work in this regard?
Or is
that
no, just... I don't think so at all. Yeah. That's just what that means to me.
I mean, if nothing else, I think I want more filibuster in my life, in many arenas.
This podcast has plenty of filibuster.
This podcast is a filibuster, let's be real.
That's also very true.
As far as I'm concerned, the art of podcasting is filibustering.
You know, it's true.
Really, you've got like a central premise, you've got a thesis, you want to stick to a core idea of a recap of the thing, as long as you're doing these recap type of podcasts. But really, the juiciest part is the filibuster, right? It's the tangent. If we're talking about the three routes, you could take the first route, which is the really smart route, which is just information. We're giving you all the information you need about the mole. You could be resourceful. You could make really clever observations about the mole, and like how that insight brings so much to your life. What it's enriching about the culture that we live in. Thinking about ways in which strategy could be implemented in the mole. Or there's the stupid approach, and we could just be talking about maraschino cherries and dinner mints, and that can make up quite a bit of the runtime here on the Mole Patrol podcast.
I prefer
the stupid team route.
The secret sauce of this podcast is our ability to kind of combine all three things in the right proportions.
Yeah. Three great tastes that taste great together.
It's true.
It's true.
You know, three great routes that route. Well, I don't know. The dumb team. I believe it's actually technically the well stupid team. So I think that there is a I feel bad about what I have to say now, but a stupid team.
Can I just go on a tangent right off the bat? Because of course, this reminds me of something, a project I did for Rob a few years ago where I researched some of the international editions of Survivor and some of the twists that had been deployed for those seasons. And two of the more interesting and relevant to this podcast ideas, one of the international editions of Survivor had a mole twist, where somebody was sabotaging the camp, and if you had a guess as to who the mole is, they had a mole gong in the middle of camp, and you would ring the gong and make your guess. And if you were correct, then that person would be eliminated and another person would be appointed the mole. So that was a thing that happened. It's very tough.
That's hard for the Survivor format. I don't know how you mesh the two together, and it's you know, how is it Survivor with a little bit of mole in its Survivor? It just doesn't, I don't know if it plays well.
I haven't seen it, so I would have to see it to know. Yeah. But, you know, they invented an entire economy for the last season of U.S. Survivor. So I guess there's a possibility that anything could work. And the other thing that they did, and this one I am dying to see rolled out for U.S. Survivor, because this is the best thing I've ever heard. There was a season where they divided the two teams up and told them, okay, before you came on, you had to be subjected to a battery of psychological and IQ testing. This is the smart team, and this is the dumb team. And that's what the tribes were called, smart and dumb. And the best part is that the scores had nothing to do with it. It was entirely arbitrary.
So there could be a lot of really experiment. Smart people on dumb. Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd have somebody like, you know, I have a law degree. How can I be on the dumb team? And like, how am I dumber than that person? And it led to a lot of resentment. So
I kind of like that.
Yeah, I think it would work. I would be really anxious to see this rolled out in U.S. Survivor.
Well, I think that that's good because, like, oftentimes, like, the just to go on the Survivor tangent is, like, a lot of the time on those, like, the theme seasons, really the tribes are fairly arbitrary. Like, someone on Brains could easily be on Beauty, could be on Brawn. And I do think that that's one of the things that and we've been talking about it here on the podcast that I love about The Mole, where it really does feel like they're a lot of the time, like, the designations are fairly arbitrary. And on top of that, like, Andy Koops is tossing out, like, qualifiers that aren't really going to apply in any meaningful way to the challenge. So I like kind of being like that. That's like baked into the premise. I like that it's like smart versus stupid. And there's a bunch of dummies on smart and a bunch of smarties on dumb.
Yep. I'm a fan.
Yeah. Good concept. Yep. All right. Well, let's talk about episode 5. No spoilers past this episode, but you should have seen episode 5 as we're talking about episode 5. I'll just say off the top of if you haven't watched episode 5 yet, I'm about to spoil Who Goes Home.
Hope you've enjoyed the first 10 minutes of this podcast. Please come back later.
Come back next week when you are ready. Jennifer, no! I'm sad. Yeah. I'm sad. I loved her. What great television. Such great TV, Jennifer.
Yeah, she's great.
She's a lot of fun.
Yeah. That was a bummer. I think we said this last time. It's like, I don't know if I can afford to lose any of these people, even the ones I don't like. You're all such good TV. This is Heartbreak City from here on out.
Yeah, it was really an exceptional cast. Like, there was no ballast in this cast.
Yeah, so it's going to be Jennifer's final ride in the smart car this week. So let's strap in and get in as well. We begin with like a little bit of a montage of like the homesickness, right? Charlie misses his lovely wife, Bernadette. In 2 days, we'll be celebrating 38 years on planet Earth together. And I wish I was home with Bernadette.
Plus a little courtship time.
Yeah. Catherine misses Brad. Tim misses flying. That's it. He doesn't miss anything. He just wishes he was still flying. A little bit of setup for, I was sideswiped by this. I had no idea we would be getting a loved ones episode in The Mole. Is this a tradition on The Mole? Do we do loved ones visits every season?
On the regular citizen, non-celebrity seasons, yes.
Okay. Wow, the celebrity seasons. I would figure that the celebrity seasons, they would be able to advocate for that. It's like, well, if you want me to be on your show, I'm a celebrity, and you're going to have at least my assistant come out a few times per season.
I think because it's less people and less time, maybe.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, but we're getting the setup. There's going to be some love in the air, but we have a ways to go to get there. 3 ways to go. In fact, it's test number 1 of 2 tests this week. The 3 routes test here in Paterna de Riviera. Did I say that right? Jess, you're the smart team.
It sounds right to me.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so here's what's up. You got to find the location of the hotel we're staying at next, and you got to find it by 8 p.m. And if you do, if 2 of the 3 groups find the hotel by 8 p.m., there's going to be $40,000 added to the pot. The teams are going to be divided on who feels like they are resourceful, who feels like they are smart, and who feels like they are, well, stupid. And it is going to divide as follows. Catherine and Steve are resourceful. I think I would have put Steve on stupid, but that's just me. Jim and Jennifer are going to go to smart, and Kate and Charlie are going to go to stupid. I feel like Kate not resourceful? Kate turned into the green-haired, chain-legged, nude-painted hero a few weeks ago. Is Kate not the most resourceful player on the field?
Isn't Kate still, like, she keeps trying to volunteer for the easy jobs because she did all that, then the easy jobs end up being the hard jobs, so I think she's still volunteering for every easy job, hoping that one of these times it will actually be the easy job.
So volunteering for the stupid tribe actually ends up being a pretty smart move in the long run, Zed, because you figure you're going to get the easy route and potentially the opportunity for some exemption or some sort of tomfoolery.
Right. Well, it's certainly the way it works out this time, since the stupid team is presumed to not be able to make it to the hotel on their own. So they get blindfolded. Lest they describe their route to the other teams.
Yeah. Blindfolded so well.
And blindfoldedly brought into the hotel so that they don't know the name, as if they're not going to be in rooms surrounded by things that tell them exactly where they are.
Yeah.
Right down to their slippers.
Like, you could have, Kate and Charlie didn't need blindfolds on. They could have been looking at every single street sign, like, wow, the countryside. And like, they wouldn't have known anything. They wouldn't have had anything to tell anybody. Anderson Cooper cracked me up so hard when he looks at the stupid people, goes, I have to admit, I am concerned about your ability to find the hotel. So you're coming with me.
It's like, well, currently no one knows where the hotel is.
Yeah. So I'm just going to take you directly to the hotel. And then Jim's like, oh, so one of our teams has already made it to the hotel. So it's just got to be one of the smart team or the resourceful team. And Anderson's like, yeah, very smart. You're on the same team.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah,
very, very good. The stupid people are going to be put in charge of the money. This, again, feels very American.
Yeah, the stupid people in America are frequently in charge of the money.
No, it's very, very, very deeply American.
Not the resourceful people, for sure.
No, so they get all the money. All right, and so if a group doesn't find the hotel, they have to find somewhere else to sleep, and it's going to be tough because the stupid people have all of the money. So that's tough. And as we're going to come to find out, that if both groups make it to the hotel, as they ultimately do, two of the six people still in the game are going to have to sleep outside of the hotel no matter what. It really is unfortunate that the resourceful team gets put in this position, because they have a hard day. They have a very tough, long day, Catherine and Steve.
Yeah, but they still didn't use half of the resources they were given. This is my problem with them.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about what was at their disposal. Okay,
what happened to the geese?
Yeah, that's
my biggest question.
All right, so the game is afoot. The stupid people will go directly to the hotel with Anderson. Jim and Jennifer get into the smart car. That Anderson Cooper calls the mini-me of European automotive.
Which I love.
Doesn't a Dr. Evil.
Well, Josh, you got to remember, and this is one of those times when the vintage of the series shows in a big way.
Yes.
Because back in the day, like, I don't think there was a smart car in the U.S. until at least 2 or 3 years later. Like, they were only in Europe, and they were weird as heck in the U.S. So you know, you would see them in Europe and you'd be like, what's that tiny ass car? That's weird. I don't like it. And now, you know, we see them everywhere. Like, they're in my tiny town of 9,000 people. Somebody's driving a smart car around. So it's really showing the vintage of it. And then there's also the fact that they play a cassette tape in the tape deck of the smart car. But also, yeah. Dr. Evil reference, very on brand for the era.
You know, Mike Myers, I think, was still really popping at the time. Shrek was bopping. Austin Powers.
Yeah.
I don't know if we were up to gold member yet or if this is pre-gold member, but we weren't even finished with Austin Powers yet at this time. This is definitely pre-Love Guru. Otherwise, Anderson Cooper isn't caught dead doing a Mike Myers impression.
I'm pretty sure nobody would be resourceful enough to be able to do a Love Guru impression, because literally nobody saw that movie.
Yeah, I have no idea what it would sound like, to be honest. Maybe someday. Should we do a Love Guru podcast?
No.
We got better podcasts.
That's for nap territory.
Yeah, that's the Robin Akiva get to handle that one. All right. So Jim and Jennifer, they have to go to a region of Spain. They have to go to the town of Espera, where there is a village idiot who will help them. A great, great idea to just like hire a character to play the village idiot who has a card. It really, was there any reason to call this person the village idiot?
No, absolutely none. He could have been anybody. He could have been the mayor. He could have been just somebody who worked at the store. Yeah. It could have been somebody they asked to stand by a statue in the town square, because every town in Spain has one. Mm-hmm. And it's not like he had some particular like jester costume or anything. It seemed to be just stand there and have maybe a vaguely vacant expression on your face.
Yeah, here's a human being. We're going to call this human being a dummy, dumb, dumb person.
Well, you could be going up to random people if you were in the wrong place. There's some comedic value in going up to a stranger and saying, hey, are you the village idiot?
Yeah. Is there anything good that's left on the cutting room floor from that? I have to wonder how many people did Jim go up to wondering if they were the village idiot? All right. So that's what Jim and Jennifer have to do. Steve and Catherine have to take a van, and they have the information of the hotel. They know exactly where they're supposed to go. The problem is they've got a van that like has no tires on it. I think the car itself is dead. Like they have to gas it up, or they have to see. I would be dead on the resourceful team. They'd put a tire on a car. Forget it. I'm done. It's over.
I had to do that yesterday. So, you know,
oh, wow.
Do you see these hands? Have they seen a hard day's work in their life?
No, you got Cooper hands.
I've got the softest hands. I'm podcasting to you right now from my wife's childhood home that her father built with his own two hands. How am I ever to compare? He'd be resourceful for sure. But yeah, to put the cars on the vehicle, I've got no idea what I would be doing there.
The cars on the vehicle,
the wheels on the bus. I have no clue, Jess, how I would do such a thing. And I don't know that I would know what to do with anything else in here. They've got geese. They have a raft
that inflates when they open the door.
So funny.
Why? That's the best. Why?
I mean, why do they have any of those things?
Like, what do you,
why is anything?
What did they want them to do? Were there like rapids? The great rapids of the Paterna de Riviera region of Spain that they could have whitewater rafted to the hotel? Was that a possibility somehow?
Were they allowed to barter the things in the van? Like this made me think of
yes,
it's like a Pearl Islands kickoff situation.
The geese are very barterable, unless the idea was to strap the raft and the geese together and have the geese pilot you on the raft to the hotel.
How many geese were there?
Some sort of homing mechanism to get them to the hotel.
These geese from the same universe as this emu that you're going to ride out of the corn maze.
Yes, correct.
He's like highly trained foul.
Yeah, when I'm president of the universe and I am in control of all reality television production, first of all, everyone's going to wear masks. That's number one. And number two, lots of challenges where you have to ride animals around. Weird ones, too. Going to be
nightmare.
Great. Going to be really, really great. Yeah, the geese. What are you doing with all these geese in your van? And what happened to them when they abandoned the van? So they've got photos, they've got the name of the hotel, so they've got, you know, enough ideas, but so much chicanery happening in the van.
I believe they also had the address of the hotel, which correct. I think is hilarious. It's like, okay, find the hotel. Here's the address of it.
I think so. Is the move to spend a decent amount of time in Aspera and be like, hey, I've got a van filled with stuff. You can have the entire van and everything inside of it if you can give me a lift to this address. Is that the move? Is that the resourceful move?
That's what I'd do. Yeah.
It was stupid.
Sounds like
now.
A good plan.
There we go. Stupid Steve. Catherine thinks Steve's wasting time talking to a mechanic, that he's really circling the drain, running the clock. Meanwhile, we are going to see we're going to see the smart car roll up on the village idiot, who's just this sweet looking man, just this very sweet looking person. Why are we calling this person a village idiot? And he's got a card, and it's a three pronged question. What king built a castle on the hill above Aspera so that he could watch the stars? There's three possibilities for kings, and they each tie to a different Spanish town. And if they pick the right answer and go to the right town, they're going to get a clue that's going to get them to the hotel. If they pick the wrong answer, they're just driving all over the place for no reason. As always, at least as of recently, there's a trap, Zed. There's a trap in this where the stupid team gets the last laugh. The stupid team, which has been ferreted straight to the hotel and is en route to getting just the greatest of massages and like grapes fed to them from servants, they have a task, which is, here's a cell phone. You can contact the stupid team and sabotage their quest. And if you keep them from coming and the resourceful team does come, then you have doubled the pot. You get 80,000 instead of 40,000. But if the smart group shows up and the resourceful crew shows up, you guys are going to sleep on the lot. And Kate and Charlie, who were being reminded don't particularly love each other, are pretty quick to like, yeah, obviously we're just going to screw with Jim and Jennifer. I think that the deck is set really well here, Jess, that Jim and Jennifer are two people that you're encouraged to do this with. Certainly with Jim, because I think Jim has demonstrated that he is a game bot, right? Like, he is somebody who is going to like, You articulate to him what just happened, and he will, even if he's suspicious of you, he's not going to have any malintent towards you. He's not going to like take it personally. Jennifer is just going to like be Jennifer and be awesome. And
she's going to take it extremely personally.
Yeah, because, like that's what's going to happen. So you just have to take that as a granted.
Yeah. So I think you couldn't have put two better people together in this case.
Right. And Kate, Zed, we have seen, is just a merc, right? She's just like, she'll shoot you in front of everybody if she thinks
that her game is over. Yeah.
So she's on board. I guess I was maybe a little surprised that Charlie was like, yes, this is absolutely what we should do. I'm not sleeping outside. There's more money in it. We get to mess with Jennifer. Win-win, baby.
Your Charlie impression is evolving quite nicely, Josh.
things are changing. I have a lot of feelings about Charlie.
So
they call Jim. Kate calls Jim. She's like, hey, Jim, you need any help? Anything we can help you with? Anything we can do for you, just let me know. And Jim's like, yeah, of course. So we've got this question. You've got a guidebook? That sounds great. Please answer these questions for us. And Kate's like, yeah, just give me a minute. She hangs up the phone. And she looks at her. She's like, he's buying it. She totally believes that we're going to help.
Her lie is terrible here, because then she says, okay, what's the question? And then she's like, okay, I'm going to look it up in the book. Oh, sorry. Answer's not in it.
Everything but the name. Let me read you this whole really specific thing that for some odd reason, I have this book that was clearly given to me for this task, but does not have the answer to your question.
Yeah, I can't find the king's name in here at all. That's what they give. They think the best answer is Carissa, and I'm probably mispronouncing that. The correct answer is Ubrique, which will, of course, be the last place the smart team goes. So the smart team is about to go 35 miles off course while Charlie and Kate are going to be getting a massage from Ava. Great day.
They're in opulence.
Yeah. How often does he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, we're in opulence. We're living in opulence right now. Really, really great. Yeah, they're just it's the living the lavish life. It's the haves versus the have nots here in the team of the stupids versus the smarts. Good. Resourceful team's van breaks down. Which leads to Catherine and Steven having to take a bike and a scooter, which almost causes a multiple vehicle pileup in the middle of Spain. Steven and Catherine, and by extension, the mole writ large, almost have tremendous blood on their hands as a result of this challenge, where just the mere sight of Steven and Catherine on these on the scooter and bike causes everybody to lose their minds on the road.
In the other direction, though, mm-hmm. which is what's really confusing to me. Like, I guess the driver was maybe looking out the window and slowed down and then maybe wasn't paying attention. So then the car behind them had to, like, rush to a stop because there's, like, tire tracks on the road.
You have to break the fourth wall here a little bit and imagine what this must
be. A whole camera crew. Yeah.
There's, like, a van in front of them with cameras hanging out of it. And if you were driving, you'd be like, oh, I wonder if that is some kind of famous person who's on that scooter crash.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on with the resourceful team. The smart team is just driving around, going from place to place, and they have no idea what's going on. And they keep calling Charlie and Kate. And they're like, oh, we went to the place. There's nothing here. I guess we'll try for this other town. And Kate is just like, yes, they're getting it. Oh, my God. They're buying what we're selling. But meanwhile, Jim and Jennifer are secretly wondering, like, this is Kate we're talking about. Kate would, you know, Kate would sell Adam down the river if it got her further in the mold. You know, there's nothing Kate's not willing to do at this point. Could they be screwing us over? But they don't really feel like they've got better options right now. I mean, what does Smarts have to do with this question that they have been asked to solve? I don't really think intelligence has much to do with anything that the Smart team has to do right now, unless the intelligence is like, you're lying to me. But what is that really going to buy them? Probably nothing.
I don't know why you wouldn't just go to a library and look it all up.
Yeah, that would be the smart thing to do.
Yeah, nobody said that's against the rules.
No one said that that's against the rules.
I mean, maybe they did off camera. Maybe that was one of those portions of the outcome that wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So they keep calling the stupid team. Like, there's got to be like, can you look outside? Any signifiers, like anything that is going to help you, like, tell us where you are, like signage. And that's when Charlie says, oh, nothing here. Just pure exuberance. We're in opulence. Live.
The camera pans down to the hotel to the slippers.
Name. Yeah. The hotel name.
The monogram slippers.
So great. Yeah. Steve and Catherine, the resourceful team, they have to like try and convince some local farmer to pour gas into the scooter. They had nothing to trade for that. I don't know how they pulled that off. The show doesn't really explain how they got the scooter gassed up. They did it. Good for them. So that's what's going on. And then Kate and Charlie start freaking out. They start panicking. They're like, okay, so Steve and Catherine aren't here yet. The time's a ticking. We may get no money at all. So maybe we do just want to stick with the $40,000 and we would be comfortable sleeping outside as long as we still get $40,000. We've been massaged. We've been pampered. We can rough it for a night. So they decide to call Jim and Jen to get them to the hotel. And they decide to not just like outright spell like, hey, so we've been lying to you because like there has been incentive to lie to you that we could double the pot. Just come back here. It's all been a ruse. Just come to this is where you should go. Because Jim is saying like, yeah, we think like maybe we need to go to Jerez. And Kate's like, yeah, we got a feeling that that's correct. Just a hunch. There's a small hunch that you're correct about that. Why don't they just say like, hey, this is where we are. We've been lying to you and this is why. Just come to us now. If like they're already deciding that they want the smart team to show up.
Yeah, there's really, I think it would be too complicated. And I think it would run the risk of having them be like, why should we believe you now? And what is the purpose of telling us? I think they played it right to say, we will explain it when you get here. Yeah. But for now, we're doing a different thing because this isn't working. Here's how you get here. I think it was smart.
Yeah. The smart team is losing their minds, though.
Jim is going full Jim.
He's transforming. Something is happening inside of Jim, and it is manifesting in the form of explosive singing, screaming at the dash cam. Jim has just lost his damn mind.
Lost his damn mind and dropped smart food all over himself, which I think is just food. It is not smart food popcorn specifically.
I was going to say, aren't all smart cars equipped with smart food?
Should be a rule.
I think it's in the... in the glove,
like you open up the open up the glove box. It's just full of popcorn.
It just falls out.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool. The smart car. If you don't have one, if you've never ridden in one, you really should try it sometime. Because the glove compartment. You open it up, and there's popcorn. You reach in, and then like you think that you're done with the popcorn. You close it back up, and then you open it up again. Holy crap! It's filled with more popcorn. How do they do it? So smart. Very.
It's smart. It's so smart. It's going to solve world hunger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we really got to be investing in big smart car energy. Moving forward.
Or small smart car energy.
Small smart car energy. That's what we've got to be working on moving forward. All right. So Charlie calls Jim eventually, just goes, come to Jerez. Come here now. Just come here. I'll explain it to you later. This is the name of the hotel. I've known it the whole time. You have to hurry. Jim and Jennifer, they've got 30 minutes to make it 20 miles. Can they do it? Meanwhile, Catherine and Steve are now riding a bicycle in tandem, which seems very uncomfortable. It just does not seem like a great way to travel through Spain is two people, one bicycle.
I mean, we were told not to do that when we were eight, so.
I didn't even see, like, this is the era of pegs on the back of the bike so you could stand and hold somebody's shoulders, but that wasn't even going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what they were doing. It's funny to me, though, because by this point, then we reached the point where they go past the sign that they needed to look at to go the right direction, as if they're in a car and they can't, like, Catherine can't just get off the bike and go look at what the sign said, mm-hmm. or they can't both just, like, back up and go look at it.
Yeah.
That's very funny and very strange to me.
Maybe that was, like, an unreported part of the rules, is no backsies. you must go forward and only forward. There's 30 seconds on the clock. Smart team does show up, and the stupid team is like, we fooled you. We had to fool you. We were in opulence. We were here the whole time. And Jim is pretty on board with it. He gets it. Resourceful team shows up 4 minutes late. And 4 minutes late is, alas, too late for them to get a room at the hotel or even to get in on whatever fancy dinner is about to ensue. Poor Steve and Catherine, who have been through hell and back to get to this hotel. Are we feeling bad for them, Jess, or are we feeling like they bungled their advantage? Do we feel like they had opportunities here that they just simply did not seize?
I don't feel terribly bad for them. I do think they did the best they could with what they had, but I also think there were a few things they could have explored that we didn't see them exploring. And who knows, maybe they did. We didn't see every minute of that 6 hour span, but you know, we can sit here. I think this is one of the great things about the way this is edited. We can sit here and armchair quarterback it and say, well, I would have done this. Why didn't they do this? And what about this? And we don't know that they did or didn't try those things.
Yeah, we'll never know. Zed, do you feel bad for Steve and Catherine here as they're smushed up in the smart car on the outs from the fancy dinner with nothing to eat other than glove compartment popcorn and some sort of weird sandwich? It's like this thick bread with like a very thin slice of something in there that I could not identify.
It's probably ham because they're in Spain. There is no food in Spain that doesn't include ham.
If it's ham, it was a kind of gnarly looking ham. It was like
it's possible.
It probably still tastes better than American ham.
It was like some sort of like thin meat patty that looked kind of like gray and weird. What is this, a goose? Is this where the goose comes in? Is the goose?
Oh, no.
Maybe they had to eat the goose.
I was too busy gandering at the goose sandwich to note what was being eaten inside of the royal family dinner.
I just count on you to make a list of everything anybody
the
eats.
Food watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe I saw dinner rolls on the table, but I was they moved too quickly. And then immediately you see Steve eating some sort of big honking bread and thin meat sandwich. That I was transfixed by. I was like, what is that? What is he eating? I have no idea. If any of you out there in the Mole Patrol, what did we call the Mole Patrol?
The Mole People.
Mole People. Hey, Mole People, do you know what kind of sandwich Steve was eating? Curious minds want to know. You can at me about that. No spoilers.
Yeah.
That's not a spoiler. That's already happened on the show.
Yeah, and don't add us any more about how you watch The Mole, because I assume that you're five episodes in at this point. You know how to do it.
It's YouTube. It's in the link. It's the show notes. We've got it. Yeah, so the great stinger on the end of this like sequence is Steve and Catherine getting into the smart car. They're having this horrible night, and they wonder, like, would another group have been able to do it better than we did? And there is the question of maybe they would have found a way to utilize the keys. That got a big chuckle for me as I was watching this late at night last night while Emily was literally next to me in bed. Why are you cackling? You wouldn't get it. It's a smart card joke. Day 19 of The Mole. Sun breaks over the smart car. Steve is stiff as a board. Catherine and Steve make it to breakfast. They are running on empty. 30 minutes of sleep. It's a good thing that today's festivities don't require a lot of physical energy or exertion of really any kind. This is probably the easiest day on The Mole that we have seen coming up, is the loved ones day. I'm trying to think of anything that is even competitive with just how easy this one is. Maybe like the 18 hours they spent in travel from Los Angeles to Europe. But that's harder because travel takes a lot out of you. This is by far and away, Zed, the easiest day we've seen on the mole, right?
Yeah, I would agree. It seems like have breakfast, stand around in a circle, collectively,
hugs and love.
Yeah,
and trust.
Collectively answer a few questions, find out if you got them right, hang out some more.
So they go to a castle, and at the castle, Jim is back in Jim Bob mode. He's got the teeth in. He's got his Jim Bob teeth in. I still don't know that I get it. Are we ever going to, like, understand this, or it's just Jim doing Jim things?
It's just Jim doing Jim things.
Got those Jim Bob teeth. So he's got his Jim Bob teeth in. They have been, they have asked six questions of the six remaining contestants' loved ones. Each question, if they successfully answer it, is worth $5,000 a piece. It's worth up to $30,000. And would you believe it? The crew gets this bang on, six for six, all the way down the line. The most redeeming quality about you is your ability to always offer a hug. That's Steve. The one thing that annoys this person the most about you is the nagging. They assume it's Kate. The thing you have least in common is fashion sense. Everybody looks at Jim. The most romantic thing you've ever done is agree to marry them. It's Catherine thinks, okay, that's what Brad said. During a relationship, they never saw a change in you. Charlie's like, I've never changed. I've worn the same clothes for 60 years and counting. Never gotten out of this uniform. So he thinks his life has been very consistent. He hasn't changed much except for losing a little hair. And who is shot out of a cannon? It's Jen. Except that then Kate's like, I think maybe I was shot out of a cannon. Jen's like, okay.
Well, here's the thing that's weird. Is they presumably know which loved one is coming to see them. And then they start talking about other loved ones.
Yeah.
This was strange to me when they're having this conversation. Jen is like, well, maybe my brother said that I nagged him. It's like, but your brother isn't coming. What is going on?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe do they have like backups on their loved ones? Because they don't know at this point which loved ones are in town, and they don't yet know that loved ones are even here, right?
I guess, but you've
signed waivers and stuff. Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those situations where you asked for your grandmother to come out and then she died. So your best friend came anyway.
Thunder D. Yeah, Thunder D is here in Spain. It's just odd. And it feels in the moment that this second guessing feels wrong. It feels like they've got you had it. You all had it. It was right. Everybody was right. But they're swapping. Very moly behavior from Kate.
Mm-hmm. Moly, moly, moly.
Starting to feel suspicious of green-haired Kate.
Yeah. To quote another Austin Powers reference, moly, moly, moly.
Moly, moly, moly. Yeah. Man, do you think we could get Fred Savage on this podcast?
Well, I don't know. Is he on Twitter?
Fred Savage.
Is that the only barrier to getting people on the podcast? Are they on Twitter?
I don't know. It worked for Phil Kogan, so I'm just saying.
The first result is taming Fred Savage. That is not actually Fred Savage.
Yeah, there's no checkmark Fred Savage here.
Yeah,
I'm going to say that's a no. Right, he might be on the Insta, but...
That stinks. Yeah. I was really excited to get Fred Savage on here to talk about the mole. Do you think that we would have invited him on and he would have thought that we were talking about his time on Austin Powers 3 and instead we'd be asking him about the mole, the show?
Yeah.
He's very unprepared.
Yeah, he would be. He's probably seen less of it than you have, Josh.
It's very likely.
I can't imagine anyone expecting to be asked to come talk about a 20-year-old television show.
Including people that were on said 20-year-old.
Including people that were on it.
Probably not. All right. Answers get locked in. And one by one, everyone's being brought into this room with all of these like aged barrels of stuff. Assume that that's where they make the Shirley Temples and all of the other fancy drinks that fancy people drink. Charlie goes first. Charlie says, tell me about, Anderson Cooper says, tell me about your wife. Well, her name is Bernadette. It's our wedding anniversary. 38 years coming up in 2 days. Very excited for my life with Bernadette. And little does he know that Bernadette is just around the corner. And huge reaction from Charlie as Bernadette shows up. Oh my God. Oh my God. Bernadette.
Stop. You're making me picture things I don't want to picture.
Oh my God, Bernadette is here. It says we were joined at the hip before. Now we're joined at the shoulder and the hip. It's very sweet. It's their anniversary celebration. Hooray! Love!
Can I just make an observation about Bernadette that...
Oh, no.
Granted, this is... We're watching this show. It is a rip of a standard def DVD on YouTube. It's not the greatest footage. Does Bernadette not resemble Kate in many, many ways? And could this fuel Charlie's ongoing resentment of Kate?
You're not Bernadette. You're not my wife. You're not the boss of me.
She's got the same pleated shorts, the same polo shirt, the same haircut, the same build. I think this might be fueling something in Charlie.
I look forward to a future scene. Don't tell me. This is a prediction of another drunk Charlie tirade where he's like, Kate, I have to confess. You're great. You're great. You just remind me too much of Bernadette. That's why I've been so hard. Yeah, I think that makes sense to me. That makes some sense to me. Steve's wife Angie is here. They hug. It feels very subdued. He's like, hi Angie. Let's hug. We'll just hug. There's like enough, but it's racy enough that Anderson Cooper's like, all right, cut it out. Family show. It's too much making out.
The search for the mole will resume after a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
And now we're back to resume the patrol. So here comes Jen, and I guess like word is starting to travel that people are seeing their loved ones. Maybe there's just like explosions of joy coming from like the catacombs of caskets that everyone's like, oh, our loved ones must be here. Spoilers. It's like if I found out who the mole was at this point in the mole pool. And so Jennifer's really psyched that Amy's here. But it turns out, as Anderson Cooper, who is doing this great bit, this recurring bit of like, oh, was that what you asked? Was that the question? Did your loved one get it right? He's asking this to no one in particular because no one comes from around the corner. And the episode for a while makes you believe that Amy, Jennifer's friend, is just not going to, has flown all the way here for nothing. And it's vicious and brutal, and Jennifer takes it poorly, as would I. What a horrible anti-loved ones visit this would be to like have someone like come all the way across the world for nothing, for absolutely nothing, not even a glimpse at your loved one.
Well, Survivor did that to people all the time.
Yeah, but don't you at least always get to like wave and say hi from a distance?
I mean, you had the one, was it Australian Outback, where they said they were doing a video chat and then the people came out from behind.
Oh, that was Vanuatu. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were doing like a webcam.
Yeah.
They were like Skyped in.
Yeah, it was like, wow, that's weird. Everybody's
reality
sitting in front
TV
of the
is
same.
So strange.
Yeah.
Remember when we Skyped in your loved ones? And then turned out we were just Skyping them from the bush around the corner? That's a thing we did.
But we need Bryce Isaiah to really comment on the loved ones here.
Yeah. Why isn't Bryce
missed
on the
opportunity
podcast
for sure?
Yeah, yeah. If I had known, I would've
yeah, he'd be like, Amy!
Amy! Yeah. Amy, where are you?
Where's Amy?
Where's Amy? Yeah. Amy's invisible. Amy's in invisible mode, and Jennifer's so upset. And on top of it, that's $5,000 out of the pot. So it's just a. And at this point, now we know that it's been bungled. that Kate will lose as well, that we probably got the rest of this right. Jim's ex-boyfriend shows up, Joe, and Anderson Cooper is dying. He is slain. He is dead. He says, wait, you think this guy doesn't have fashion sense? You look exactly the same.
I love this moment. It is so funny to me. He's like, you guys are dressed exactly
identical.
Can we also talk about the 2000-ness of this, where the alleged great fashion sense guy has a chain wallet?
Mm-hmm. It's remarkably great. It's just so great. It's so great that he is the one who's like dunking on Jim for his terrible fashion, but they really are dressed very similarly.
Like a t-shirt, straight leg jeans.
Yeah, t-shirt and jeans.
Vaguely punk aesthetic.
So fashionable. T-shirt
like
and
the
jeans.
Same sunglasses even. Jim is wearing his and his buddy has them hanging from his shirt, but they're like exactly the same.
Anderson Cooper is so funny in this moment where he's like, all right, I mean, I don't believe it's true, but it's
but
true.
You're right.
You did say this. Here comes Catherine's fiance, Brad, who walks out with the double t-shirt. He's rocking the double t-shirt, one t-shirt on, the other t-shirt, two t-shirts. It must be a cold day in Spain. You need two shirts on. Not if you're Charlie. If you're Charlie, you're halfway out of the shirt at this point, I think.
I miss the days when you could wear two t-shirts.
Double shirt.
It's a good look.
Double shirt. He's got the double shirt on. He looks like someone I went to summer camp with, Brad.
He looks like he's named Brad.
He definitely looks like a Brad. Total
he's
Brad.
He's so Bradish.
He's very Bradly. And so he's just like kind of awkward. And then meanwhile, outside, Jen's crying. She's very upset. She says, I'm tough on the outside, but I'm a marshmallow on the inside. Kate is going to be like, I think Adam's going to be here, but Adam's not showing up either. Where is Adam? Adam's nowhere. And then Kate walks out to Jen as everybody else is in the courtyard celebrating with their loved ones. And Kate walks over to Jen because the two of them are just like very uncomfortably alone. And Jen's like, we were right the first time. And she walks away. Very She's like, not even going to, she can't even tolerate the sight of Kate at this point. Lots of hate for Kate, I feel like, amongst the cast. She gets, Too much hate from everybody.
She's been in some tough positions in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I do. I guess I'm quick to forget that she tried to assassinate Steve in front of everybody. That is a thing that happened.
Yeah, but the green hair and the casts and the nude portrait.
Yeah, how quickly we forget that. 20,000 added to the pot, so 60K total over the course of this episode. Anderson is very sorry to Jennifer and Kate. It's a tough game. Says, just kidding, Amy and Adam, come on out! Yay. So that was just cruelty for cruelty's sake. Did we buy much by keeping Amy and Adam at arm's length, Jess, for this long? Do you think that this was the right production choice?
I think so. It did kind of sow some discontent there. There was some crying and yelling. Just enough crying and yelling, but it wasn't cruel. Yeah. It wasn't like, again, the survivor move of you get to have a meal with your loved one. You get to give them a hug. You have to wave across the room and you don't get anything.
Yeah.
This was better.
Yeah. Kate takes off her hat. She's like, check this out. And I'm like, what have they done?
Again, it was not a thing that every single person under the age of 30 did to their hair back in 2000.
Uh-huh. I
don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Is that, have you ever dyed your hair? Is that something you've ever thought
not
about?
Not
I think that's their natural color.
Couple of months.
Yeah. Around this time, I had, I was probably a year away from my, maybe 2 years away from my bleach blonde senior year.
I was going to say, Wiggler, did you ever frost your tips?
Of course. Did I ever frost my tips? What kind of question is that?
Yeah. You were a youth in the, at the turn of the millennium.
In the early 2000s.
You're a man of a certain age.
Yeah. Of course I frosted my tips.
Incredible.
I did it for a play, and then I kept doing it after the play. I was like, oh, Wiggler.
That's how they get you.
You look great. I was very high, I have to say, for much of that period of my life. I was like, wow, you look so cool. Sunglasses indoors, frosted tips. You're looking great. Gotta find a picture somewhere.
I was gonna say we should find pictures of ourselves from around the year 2000, 2001.
I'll reach out to my mom, see if she's got anything lying around. It's definitely out there. I looked like Guy Fieri before Guy Fieri was really.
Oh my gosh.
It was a great look. Really, really great. All right, so for a few minutes, the games, the tests, they're over. There's a little photo shoot. Was this for like a magazine or anything, do we know, or was this just for fun?
Souvenirs.
Yeah, I was on the mole and all I got was this lousy loved ones t-shirt.
Hey, a few years from now, they'd be taking those pictures on, you know, the Sprint Palm Pre.
Yeah,
those high quality photos to keep forever.
Yeah, hashtag ad. So tonight it's the fifth execution. Dinner's at 8:30. Loved ones, you are invited to participate in the festivities. So this is exciting. The loved ones
of the execution.
Yeah, you get to watch one of your loved ones get executed on television. We get to hear a little bit about what's going on back home. First, Jennifer goes to her friend Amy. Says, "I'm not alone." And Amy is naked and opens the door anyway and didn't get the memo of what "I'm not alone" means. Now you're quasi naked on national television and on YouTube, apparently, which is where we watch the
forever in perpetuity. Yeah.
20 years later. But, you know, it's been 20 years. Maybe she's proud of that moment now.
Yeah, who knows? Charlie's wife, Bernadette. Bernadette says that she's replaced Charlie with the remote control.
She's been replaced, Charlie.
So Charlie is now a remote control.
I have a moment I need to talk about here.
Please do it. Just come on in.
Because I think you're probably about to go here. We need to talk about the editing on the stinger that goes before commercial at this point, where they show Steven and his wife sitting there and he says, "I spent the night with another woman."
Yes.
Then she says, "That's about what I expected." And, and they cut it so it looks like drama. And then, of course, they show the real moment and she's like laughing at him because, of course, it's ridiculous. He's on a TV show and it was in a smart car.
Yeah. It's great. It's great.
It's very 2000 editing.
I love this show so much. I'm so happy we've done this. This is just fantastic. We get like a little bit of like, what does everybody think of their loved one being the mole? Adam's like, could Kate be the mole? Maybe she could pull it off. Joe thinks that Jim is the mole, but he won't tell me. Jim says, "No, I told you. I said I wasn't, but you can believe me or not. That's the game." Brad thinks his fiance could absolutely be the mole. He thinks Catherine is very sweet and sometimes unassuming, but she could be very sneaky. And Catherine's like, "Excuse me? What are you trying to say?" Of course, Brad and I are on the same page, as I also believe Catherine to be the mole, as I've been angling all of my mole quizzes that the great DJ LaBelle Klein has been providing me with. In the direction that Catherine is mole. Although there's a few questions that DJ LaBelle Klein is asking me that are like, where does the mole appear in the opening credits? I'm like, I don't know. And I just put like fourth. So some of those are just like non-starters. But everything else I'm trying to do Catherine. Catherine. I don't trust Catherine. I don't believe in Catherine. Amy, could Jennifer be the mole? I don't know. And that happened really quick. And I was like, oh, we're restricting content. Oh, maybe finally, like for the first time between that and her and the being like an open target during laser tag. It's like, oh, it could be Jennifer. It's not Jennifer. Jennifer's eliminated in just a few minutes. Executed. I apologize. Charlie, if I was the mole, I wouldn't tell Bernadette. I wouldn't want her to bear the burden of me being the mole. And then I'd have to kill Bernadette if I told her I was the mole and I enjoy your company. Plus, it's our anniversary. Happy 38. 39 coming up. And we get a cake. They trot out a cake. Do we think an ice cream cake? Is that like a Fudgy the Whale?
No, that's a dulce de leche cake. I'm almost sure of it.
As in like the caramel?
Or no, like that's not what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of tres leches. Three milk cakes. Like
very specific.
Or that's probably... That's a Mexico thing, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think it's just like a boring ass cake with like vanilla icing on it.
A tres leches sounds good.
I want that in my face right now. And yeah. I don't know if I can get that within 100 miles of here.
It's not going to be good if you can anyway.
Maybe I'll just make one.
Yeah. Oh, tres leches is really good.
Yeah, I want that now.
That sounds very, very good. Charlie is happy now. Charlie's like, oh, this has been incredible. This has been the best day.
I was waiting for you to identify what's on their plates because I couldn't.
It was just cake.
No, there's cake and then there's their dinner plates are next to it.
Yeah, but I, as I've said, I'm not pausing down on the food. I'm just getting it really quickly. And my eyes were like, cake? Cake? We got cake? What kind of cake we got? Is that a Fudgy the Whale with little cookie crumbles in between the ice cream layers? No, I don't think so. Let's go with Tres Leches. Tres Leches cake. Today was a great day for Charlie. But alas, drama, thunderstorm. Execution time. Heavy downpour of rain. A tempest is approaching the mall. Someone is going to be swept up in the storm. Yeah, if I was doing the mall fifth one out, the storm is about to go down here.
It's like the universe is displeased with who's getting eliminated.
Yeah, the universe, much like me, is very sad that this is going to be Jennifer's last stand. We get a little bit of the how does everybody feel about everyone. I'm not, again, like I should probably be tracking this more. This feels like are there actual clues to be gleaned here? Catherine is saying Kate is desperate. She's desperate with small things that don't add up. Jim thinks that Catherine is much tougher than she looks. If Jim is suspecting Catherine, I feel like Jim is a good person to align your thought with because he seems to be very strategic about the game. So I like that. Jen thinks it's suspicious that Catherine and Steve are like so closely working together. I guess it's worth noting. It seems like Steve, because Jen also had the comment earlier in the episode that Steve and Jim seem like they're really, really tight right now. So like, is Steve just like playing this super social game where he's in with everybody? He's in with Charlie as well. I guess he didn't take it too personally that Kate tried to assassinate him. So that's a good social game. So Steve's like sort of the hub of things right now. More thunder. Someone's about to leave. Andy's like, this is very, very sad, very upsetting that somebody has to go. So sorry about this. Tough game. We enter the names randomly. It's Catherine Green, because she's the mole. Steven Green, because maybe he's the mole. Jennifer Red. No! And I was surprised. I don't know who I was expecting, but like, you can never really tell. You can never really tell who's going to go home on the mole.
Well, this kind of plays into some feedback that we got.
Yeah,
that I think is a fun question that we can ask. That Henry Wall wrote to us this week, and he said, "So we know who Josh thinks is the mole. Why don't you ask him who he thinks will win the show? I would be interested in hearing his thought process on who has a winner's edit."
Yeah, I would say Jim is standing out to me in that regard right now, because he's the one who's talking about the game so thoroughly. He's like, he's getting like that Richard Hatch edit to me, it feels like. Man, so that's the thing though, because after Jennifer is gone, we're left with Jim, Steven, Catherine, Charlie, and Kate. And I love Kate, but I don't feel like Kate's getting a winner's edit. And I don't think that Charlie and Steven are getting a winner's edit, and I don't feel like either of them can be the mole. If one of them's the mole, that's crazy and very funny. But I think that Catherine is the mole, so I think I'll stick with, I think Jim is winning and Catherine's the mole, and those are my predictions right now. We'll see.
Fair enough.
That's where I'll land for now. Rather than be a fancy Fencerton, I'll just give you definitive fact. That's how I feel. Jennifer, she's gone, but she's happy because at least she's got Amy to go with her on the long ride back to the US of A. And they're probably experiencing a rain delay, right? Like, they're probably in Spain for at least another day or two with this weather. So that's nice. That's a consolation.
Yeah, you can have some big gray sandwiches while they wait.
Yeah, what is that? Really?
Mystery ham.
Anyways, oh. That's the end of Jennifer. Very sad. Any thoughts on Jennifer that you were both having when you were watching the show for the first time? Any reactions that you remember feeling of losing Jennifer at this point?
I mean, she's a great character. She's kind of a lightning rod for conflict, which makes her an extra great character.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I never once thought she had a handle on who the mole was or that she was the mole. But I think she definitely brought something unique to the table, and I was sorry to see her go.
Yeah. Is that any final words for Jennifer?
I think on any show, I'm just always disappointed to see women leave.
Yeah.
When these things tend to be so male dominated so often.
What's the split right now? 3 men, 2 women, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's actually stayed fairly even on this show. I think in part because there's nothing you can do to get rid of people, really. It's just purely your own merit, as we've discussed before.
Yeah. I'm sad. I feel like, I don't know. I don't know if I thought that Jennifer could have won this thing necessarily, that she was getting a winner's edit, but she was getting a very fun edit. There's such a great moment when Jim says, "I'll miss her. She was a good player. She was my friend. She is my friend.
She didn't die.
Literally
kill her."
Yeah. But he's really leaning into this idea of, like, you know, no harm, no foul in this game. We're all still going to be friends once it's all over. And Charlie's like, "Speak to yourself. Never going to talk to any of you again."
He's not friends with them now.
No.
He's not dead.
Is he really?
Well, yes.
Now, yes.
Sorry. That was abrupt. But yes, he passed away a few years ago.
I'm sorry. R.I.P. Charlie.
I just meant he wasn't friends with people at the time of the show either.
Yeah,
well, there's that. Yeah. Yes. The now of 2000 when this was on. And the now of now.
A thundercloud over my heart. It's a thundercloud over my heart. Charlie will live on Mole Patrol.
Yes.
The impression shall continue. All right. That's the episode. Any other feedback that we got, Jess, that you want to throw our way?
We got a lot of interesting anecdotes, like people's personal relationships with the locations from the show, which is really entertaining. And a couple of people that have written in about this over the last few weeks, they're giving away things from future episodes. So I don't really want to.
Yeah. Lock that up.
Yeah. We're keeping that lockdown tight, but, there is, we did have a writer in her who wants to remain anonymous, but, who lives in Spain and said that, they work at a summer camp, and the summer camp has a branch that actually stays at the hotel that was pictured in this episode.
Oh, cool.
So, they apparently, it's not such a nice hotel that it can't be overrun with children who are trying to learn English and play golf.
Okay. Fair enough.
That was the description.
Yes.
Great.
So it is sometimes not as relaxing as depicted in this episode.
It looks very relaxing.
I wanted
Charlie
to be there.
Kate were living that opulent life.
Yeah, we actually had an opportunity this week to spend the night in a hotel, and I picked what I had spent my childhood understanding was the nicest hotel in the area where we were. And we had stayed there before, and it was great. And so I'm like, yes, I want to go back here. It's going to be amazing. And it was kind of like that scene in Hot Tub Time Machine where they think they're going to the fancy ski lodge, and it was lumpy bed, and you could hear everything that was happening in the hallway, It was very sad. I was so disappointed because when am I ever going to stay in a hotel again? And
did you find the time traveling hot tub?
There was no time traveling hot tub. Well, in fairness, there were other people in the hot tub at the resort, so I didn't want to go near it because we're distancing. But
also don't want to get trapped in a time loop with strangers.
Honestly, if there's a time machine, I feel like I got a lot of stuff to do. I probably should have gone to see if there was a time machine, but sadly, I did not. Oh, wow. And we're still here in this reality.
Oh, man. Yeah, how do we get out of it?
I don't know. But speaking
activate change.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we will go forward, and we will, you know, we'll find ways to make it better. And small and large.
All right. So we're going to go forward in the podcast by also going backward, right? We're going to look back on reality shows that were and see if Jess can once again fully stump you and I, Zed. We got to get on the board at least this week. The board.
Yeah.
Let's travel back to happier times now. The first decade of the new reality shows were abundant and strange.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's hear what's available.
All right. So this week, our first theme is going to be blurring the lines of fiction and real life.
Okay.
Which I guess reality TV does in general, but this is a very specific. Game. We're going to riff on different kinds of popular culture for these next options. And remember, three of these really happened and one of these is fake. So,
okay.
First up, we got The Real Gilligan's Island, which aired in 2004 on TBS. Two teams of people cast to the archetypes of the classic sitcom Gilligan's Island first compete head-to-head to eliminate their counterpart on the other team. Then they battle it out individually for a cash prize.
I think that that's right. I think that that's real.
Yeah,
I think so too. I'm pretty sure I remember that. The Real Gilligan's Island sounds like the name of a thing that I was aware of.
Well, okay. So noted. All right. Second up, we've got Saved by the Bell, the newest class, which aired in 2006 on VH1. Host Dustin Diamond presides over this piece of peak 90s nostalgia as teams of teenagers cast to various Saved by the Bell archetypes compete in high school-inspired challenges based on actual Saved by the Bell episodes. Naturally, the series features cameos from several alums of the show, including Dennis Haskins and Mario Lopez.
Okay, what year was this?
2006.
Okay, I don't believe it, but continue.
All right. We have The Search for the Next Elvira, which aired in 2007 on Fox Reality. Cassandra Peterson, a.k.a. late night horror movie show hostess Elvira, mm-hmm. presides over this competition designed to evaluate the spookiness and sexiness of the contestants and crown the next portrayer of the character. As they are eliminated, contestants are theatrically burned into ash.
Incredible.
How does that work? Like
CGI, I assume.
Listen, if Flora's lava can drown people in lava.
I guess. But that's like you're just submerged in liquid. Like, how do you get theatrically burnt to ash? I do wonder.
I will say that I probably could have come up with a whole sub game based around reality shows where people die fake deaths.
Yeah, no, that'd be fun.
Because there were many.
That'd be fun. All right, yep. Fourth
okay,
one.
Okay, and
board.
Finally, fourth option, The Real Wedding Crashers, 2007 on NBC. Ashton Kutcher produced this extremely short-lived series in which real-life weddings were interrupted by outlandish stunts in the style of his other show, Punk'd. Now, before you ask, the bride and groom are allegedly in on the joke, but not the guests.
Okay, who's the host of this?
Ashton Kutcher.
I do not know if he appeared on camera or not. He was involved. I'm going to guess he was on camera.
Okay. Zed, I am pretty sure that Saved by the Bell, the newest class, is a mole. And I'll tell you why. Because by 2006, the game was up for Dustin Diamond. People knew that Dustin Diamond, that Screech, if not outright canceled, like toxic. We don't want to go near Screech. We don't like Screech. I think in the Saved by the Bell family, even though Screech went on to be in the most Saved by the Bell stuff, he was in the college years. He was in the new class. But I think people didn't like Dustin Diamond. And I think that he was like angling towards his documentary stuff. He was doing like weird, dirty, bad stand-up routines. I saw him at college at Syracuse do stand-up where he would like say something really, really dirty and he would follow it by saying, "Trust the dust." It was very, very dumb. Yeah. And that would be like around like 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
And like maybe he and Belding kept in touch to a certain degree, but there's no way that AC Slater, who's going on to like try and mainline his career, is still hanging out with Dustin Diamond. So for those reasons, I want to think that Saved by the Bell, the newest class, is the fake.
Well,
that sounds well argued to me.
Okay, Josh, but I am going to quibble with you on the timeline a little bit. Because Dustin Diamond's memoir didn't come out till 2009, and that was close to the time, like I think it was a couple of years after the sex tape. But in 2006, he was very much a staple.
When was the sex tape?
The sex tape was like 2007, maybe.
Yeah.
Because around this time was the time when he was appearing on like Celebrity Fit Club, and he was making the circuit of the celeb reality genre.
Yeah.
However, you are correct. That
yeah.
one.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I think he was like ready to pop. He was like ready to pop in that moment. You know?
Yeah, I know that he kind of got canceled around that time, but it was a little bit later on. I guess I could have fudged the date, made it a little earlier to fool you, but I think maybe I probably wouldn't have.
Yes, yes. You can't trust the dust. That's a lesson I learned in school. That's one of the things the stupid team remembers from college.
Yeah, fair enough.
Can't trust the dust.
No.
Don't do dust. Okay.
Definitely don't.
No.
think Nancy Reagan taught me that. Okay, next up, our category is travel through time.
Yeah, I love doing that.
Yes, I wish I could.
My favorite thing.
So topical this week.
Yes.
All right, so we have The 70s House, which aired on MTV in 2005. 12 contestants move into a house thinking they're about to participate in a real-world style documentary show, only to find that they'll be living in an immersive environment that mimics life in the 1970s, from the fashion to the technology to the lingo.
What year was this and what network was this on?
2005 on MTV.
Okay. That 70s reality show?
No, it's called The 70s House.
The 70s House.
Yes.
Yeah, The 70s House.
All right, we have Regency House Party, which aired in 2004 on PBS.
Uh-huh.
This
PBS.
Regency House Party on PBS. Okay.
This BBC import featured 10 singles plus four older female chaperones attempting to navigate the courtship customs of 1811 England.
Oh.
Okay. Great.
Oh, no.
One of the single men. There weren't very many love matches on the show, but one of the single men actually fell in love with one of the older chaperones, 25 years his senior, and they're still together.
Cool.
Wow.
Good for them. That's great. I want to believe it's real.
I'm cheering for love here.
Me too.
Okay. Next up, we have Texas Ranch House, which aired in 2006 on PBS. 15 people move to a remote ranch in Texas and attempt to spend 2.5 months running the ranch using only technology and tools from 1867.
Okay. That feels very PBS, Zed.
Yeah. That's
either way, we're getting a PBS reality show. PBS reality shows are happening. Yeah.
All right. And finally, I have Party Like It's 1599, which aired in 2008 on the History Channel. With the help of actual Renaissance scholars, 20 Renfair enthusiasts are divided into peasantry and nobility and tasked with living in a meticulous, grueling recreation of life in Elizabethan times.
I believe the History Channel would make such a thing. I've watched some crazy stuff on the History Channel, and full disclosure, was a performer at a Renaissance fair for several summers lifetime.
Walk us through, travel through time to your Renfair days and tell us what that was all about.
Well, I was a pirate, naturally. Professional crossdresser since 2014.
Hell yeah.
I played Mary Reed for a year, who was very possibly a transgender pirate.
Really?
Yeah. Born a woman, is called Mary Reed her whole life, but dressed as a man, sailed as a man, fought as a man, had a relationship with Anne Bonny, she was rad. You should look her up.
Awesome. No,
but yeah, I would do like sword fights and stage combat and stuff throughout the course of the day and run around and get into fights with people and yell at patrons who were looking at me funny and.
Yeah, it's similar to what we do here on the podcast network.
Did you eat those giant turkey legs?
I am a vegetarian, so no, I did not. And even in my breaks where I would eat meat, those are disgusting to me. They're just like, they're so big. And it looks like an animal. I don't want it.
You know, the places where you get the giant turkey legs typically are like the huge amusement parks, and you're mostly going there on a hot day, I feel like, or at least that's been my experience.
Yeah, it's a kind of a cultural mismatch, isn't it?
And why are you running around on a hot day with a giant turkey leg? It feels like the wrong thing to eat.
This is a thing I think about when I'm out protesting in shorts and a tank top, though, is that I used to run around in several layers, including one year a black leather vest. Yeah. So things could be a lot worse. It's hot out there. Be nice to people if you go to the Ren Fair.
Cold food on a hot day, I think.
Yes.
So cold. Oh, well, I guess we have to make a choice here. So we're throwing our support behind the Ren Fair and wishing that it's true.
I think the 70s one is true.
Well, so here's the thing. We have to. So there's two PBS options, Zed.
Mm-hmm.
One of which I remember, the Texas Ranch House, and the other one now I'm remembering, which is the
courtship BPC partnership. Yeah.
So two-parter for you. Of the two, which one would you think is fake? And then the second part being, let's not forget who we're dealing with here. Jessica Lee is on the smart team. Is she fooling us? Is she trying to lure us towards picking one of the PBS options by throwing two PBSs in here? And it's actually either the 70s show or the Ren Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to figure out, just work the system.
When did that 70s show end?
All I have is the date it premiered, which is 2005.
Okay.
But I mean, when was that 70s show?
Oh, that 70s show?
Yes. The sitcom. Do we know when that?
Oh,
I'm trying to think, because like I can't imagine it airing while that 70s show was
2006.
On for, like,
it ended in 2006.
Okay. But that would that not be like we're trying to build on the popularity of that 70s show?
Then that depends on if MTV and NBC are related networks.
And it's trying to mess us up by there being this there was like a happy love story here, Jess. What was
the mole is in our heads.
I'm just getting in your heads, aren't I?
There was somebody who's like, we found love here in the 70s house and we're still
married. Regency House Parties.
Oh, no, that was Regency House Parties.
Okay. Well, then that would make me suspicious of Regency House Party with its connection.
Did anything good happen?
Yeah. I think I would either go Regency House Party or I would sell that 70s show reality version down the river and say that that's the mole. Zed, you get to pick.
Oh, brutal. I think the 70s one is not real.
All right, I'll throw my lot in behind Zed. 70s is canceled.
Nope, you're wrong. I fooled you again.
All right, well, what was it?
The fake show is Party Like It's 1599, although I wish to God that was real.
We got all excited about the Renaissance.
I mean, we did get a quest a few years later, which is sort of that, but...
I had a friend who was on the quest.
Oh, who was your friend?
From the Renaissance Fair, Christian.
Okay, cool.
He actually had to leave the fair that year to go film the show.
Yeah, I recapped that with Kirk Clark, so...
I haven't listened to it, but I know that that's out there in the ether for me to go back to. There were rumors that there was going to be another season, and it has not happened, and I'm sad because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, right. It was a very cool show, and I kind of missed the quest. It was a great idea for a show, and just didn't have its moment.
And then Kirk Clark ruined it for all of us.
Yeah, it's a classic.
I think it was his fault. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The quest continues. We've got one more round here. Either way, Zed, victory, right? We're not going to shut out this week.
We improved.
Yeah. So that's good. I'm happy about that. But I'd love to go with 2 out of 3.
Okay. Here we go. Our final category this week is more weird ass dating shows.
Mortifying stuff is about to happen. Let's hear it.
Yes. All right. So first up. We have
the best part of this segment is always like watching Zed how deeply uncomfortable you are by like all of like these problematic shows.
Yeah.
It's just like,
ignorance has been bliss in this realm of my life.
Yeah.
I will say these are weird, but they're not problematic.
Okay, cool.
At least aged better.
Like not as problematic as some of the ones that we have run across.
Great.
Okay. All right. So
low bar. Let's clear it.
Yeah, it is a low bar. But first up, we have Sox Appeal, which aired in.
I'm in.
Yep.
I'm in.
Josh,
you haven't even heard what this is. I don't know if this is. This is not your jam, Josh, but
it's a
great name already. 2007 on the New England Sports Network. So there's your first clue.
Okay.
Over the course of a Red Sox game, a sports fan goes on 3 blind dates lasting 2 innings apiece. During the 7th inning stretch, they are asked to choose which date they'd like to continue seeing.
It's a terrible idea for a show. That's so specific. I mean, I guess it is like for New England specifically, but that's awful.
I mean, Red Sox fans should just date each other and like stay out of the dating pool.
I'm so glad that my wife can't hear the other side of this conversation.
Yeah, while you're sitting in Massachusetts.
I know. All eyes are on me right now.
Surrounded by socks.
Okay.
That's tough. That's tough because you have no way of predicting how long a baseball inning will last.
Yeah.
Baseball
it's
is
true.
Like the one sport I really know anything about. And it could be, you know, 10 minutes.
Time.
It could be half an hour.
Yeah. You could be getting to the 7th inning and like 5 hours have passed potentially.
It's true.
That sounds brutal, but it is possible.
It's a bit like the MTV show Next, where you go on a date and it could be 1 minute long or it could be 60 minutes long.
Right.
Yep. All right. So next up, we have Science of Love,
mm-hmm.
which aired in 2007 on NBC. In this one-night event, an eligible man chooses a woman he is attracted to from a pool of prospective suitors, and he dates that woman as well as one chosen for him by quote-unquote science. He then chooses which one he'd like to keep dating.
That's
interesting.
The one-night event, Zed, that feels so doable for a single night of television.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
The science of love. You can see that being a show. The least believable part is that it was actually just one night. It feels like
right.
A series. Okay.
Okay. So next up we have Monkey Business, which aired in 2006 on
just
CW.
Just trying not to break, everybody. Just so you know. She's breaking. She's breaking. I'm watching.
I'm so
break.
Excited to find out what
okay.
it is.
This okay.
Is
okay. All right. I'm going to reset here.
All right. She's got to reset.
All right.
Jess is breaking. Whatever Monkey Business is.
All right. A woman has to pick one of three bachelors to date based solely on their written answers to her questions. What she doesn't know is that one of the potential suitors is a chimpanzee who is randomly picking slips of paper with pre-written answers.
I'm very proud of you for getting through it.
I did it.
That's so wild.
I can't tell if you're laughing because it's so crazy that it happened or if you're laughing at your own mad genius.
Right, and you guess you'll never know.
Yeah, well, we'll know.
Know soon.
Or ... question mark.
Yeah. Incredible.
Okay.
That's a great premise for a show.
I agree. Next up, we have The X Effect, 2006 on MTV. People go on dates with their exes and are presented with activities designed to help them rekindle things. While on their dates, they're covertly watched by their current partners and will have to decide at the end of the date which person they're going to be with.
That's so MTV. Totally
yeah.
Believable. I buy
Sounds
that every day.
Awful and very accurate.
Yeah, yeah. So I think then for me, it would be Monkey Business or Sox Appeal. I feel like the other two feel real to me.
Yeah. Who's the market? What's the audience for Sox Appeal?
It's New England. It's a New England network. So it's
sure,
like
sure, but are there a lot of sports fans who want to watch a dating show?
Great question. Don't think so.
I'm probably stereotyping a bit here, but I don't think those demographics have a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
And I just don't think it would be that interesting, but that's just me personally.
I'm fine to get this one wrong if we say that Sox Appeal is fake because we want to believe that Monkey Business is real.
In our dream world,
yeah,
where Monkey
yeah.
Business is a real show.
But I can't. But I really, like, there is a piece of me that really strongly believes that Jess was cracking at her own mad genius over Monkey Business.
Yeah, that's equally possible. Don't let me logic us out of the truth here.
Yeah, but let's say Sox Appeal is the mole.
Okay.
Final answer.
Is that final answer?
Yeah.
You don't. Yeah. You don't. We don't have to. Don't take the hand off the chess piece yet. Not until we're ready.
No, I stand by my logic. I just, you got one right, and then I got our second one wrong. So now I feel.
But now it's
pressure.
Your chance. Now it's your chance. Redemption or, well,
further failure.
Further failure. Yeah.
I'm
the stupid team, so I'm not going to get this right.
So or could you be sabotaging?
Possible.
Ugh, the mind games. I think Sox Appeal is not real.
Okay.
Finally.
So you are incorrect, but I was not high on my own supply here.
Okay. All right.
I didn't come up with this one. We have to give credit to mad genius AJ Mass. And when he wrote this, I'm like, this is so obviously fake, but I cannot stop laughing at it. So I have to use it.
All right. Well, AJ should be allowed to make television shows.
I want the writer's room to consist of AJ and a chimpanzee with a fishbowl full of random ideas.
I don't think we need anyone else. I think two writers, it's AJ and the monkey, and that's it.
Agreed.
I'll watch whatever comes out of that writer's room. All right, 1 out of 3 is an improvement.
It's an improvement.
Nowhere to go but up, guys.
We got closer. No,
we used to be so good at this.
I know. Remember when we were like 3 out of 4?
Legs and hot dogs.
All right. Well, the good news is a week off. We've got a week off from the podcast. We've got a week off from the pressure of the game. We've got a week to collect ourselves, splash some water on our faces, do whatever rituals we got to do in order to best Jess on the next round of Jess Who. I don't know what you want to call it.
You're gonna best Jess with your best guess.
Yeah, best Jess with your best guess. All right, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with episode 6 of The Mole. I know better than to ask for a tease of what's coming next. It's better if I don't know. Follow us on the Twitter bots. We're around. I'm at Round Howard. Zed is at Hard Rock Oak. Jess is at Haymaker Hattie. I don't know. What else is going on? You guys okay? Everyone's all right?
Yeah. Everything's super.
All things good.
That's your podcast, actually.
That is mine. Yeah, we just posted our Doctor Strange recap on Everything is Super. Spoiler, Kevin and I didn't like it. Thumbs down. It was more like we're very disappointed. Like, why did you be better? You could have been so good. And then you were just a disappointing movie. We've got Guardians of the Galaxy 2 recording very soon, but dropping in your podcast feed next week. The Lost podcast is still happening. We're in season 3 now. Did you still like Lost as of season 3, Jess?
Yeah, I thought season 4 was very strong and season 3 was okay. It was really like late season 5 when it started
time
to break my
lost.
Heart.
Time travel,
yes. And, you know, time travel is usually like catnip to me, but in this case, it was a hard sell. And when they got into like all this spiritual stuff with like the random guy that looked like John Lennon, I was like hard out.
Whose name was literally Lennon.
That's right. That was cheap. That was cheap AF. You're making me mad again. You should come check us out on the main podcast feed. Rob Cesternino, Mike Bloom and I are doing weekly recaps of the Phil Kogan hosted Tough as Nails, and it was already pretty fun. And then Phil himself started listening to it and said, "Hey guys, can I be on your show?" And so now we have a fourth, and our fourth is Phil Kogan. And that is a thing that is really happening in 2020. And we're having a freaking blast, and you guys should all be listening to us.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Phil Kogan, the gem of the new RHEP talent search, right? Phil Kogan applied. Phil Kogan got in.
Yep, they went for diverse voices, and they got another middle-aged white dude.
That's right. That's what
at least
got.
He's not American.
I guess. That's what we got out of it. So it's all worth it in the end. Brooklyn Zed, what's up? You got anything to promote? Anything
no,
you want to say?
I'm just out. Oh, well, plenty of things I want to say, but you can hear all the things that I have to say over on Twitter or Instagram, where I'm perpetually yelling about politics at politicians, etc. I'm also watching Canada's Drag Race. I'm not on that podcast, but if you want to talk to me about it, I'm happy to talk about it.
There you go. Invitation thrown out there. Is it an invitation or is it like invite me?
Either, both.
I don't know how it works. I don't know.
Conversation is an activity that requires more than one person.
Two-way street.
There you go.
All right. Well, I'm going to be very sad to miss both of you next week. This has been such a great ritual in these strange quarantine times, is to have this weird throwback show with my two friends here talking Mole Patrol each and every week. We're going to close things out the way that we started, with a little ditty from our good friend, Will from America, closing out with the theme song, newly minted, to Mole Patrol. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Mole Patrol, now be your retribution. They're gonna tell you all about the latest execution. At the Mole Patrol, they're looking for clues. They're trying to get a call from Andy Cruz. At the Mole Patrol.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.